The celebrity phone is once again lighting up, and everybody knows this is my favorite segment of the show, not really, because I never know who's calling in. So let's go to the celebrity phone. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Jeremy. How you doing, man?
Hi, who's this?
Hello. I can tell you, or is it supposed to be like a mystery or something crazy?
No. Can you give me a clue?
Well, I was in, my name is Agador, but sometimes also Spartacus. Or you can just say Agador Spartacus.
It's my teen crush. Oh, geez, this is embarrassing. It's Hank Azaria, isn't it?
Yes, it is, Jeremy. I hate to disappoint you. Actually, Hank Azaria.
Wow, what a surprise. Thanks for calling in. How are you?
I'm doing all right, you know? During this insane time.
Yeah, it's a strange time. So, in case anybody doesn't know, he was doing the character from The Birdcage, which was one of my favorites when I was growing up. But now everybody knows you from Brockmire, right? The show just wrapped on IFC, and season 4, and it's on Hulu, right? Everybody's watching on Hulu.
Yeah, well, how about everybody? We're a cult hit, which is code for we're a great show that nobody watches. So let's rectify that. If nothing else to do, you can't spend all day with your family. You have to binge watch something.
Well,
one of the few silver linings for me is maybe more folks will check out Brockmire. Yes, on Hulu seasons 1-3. We've actually been trending on Hulu the last couple of weeks. So I'll offer your audience the Brockmire Challenge, I now call it, Jeremy.
That's okay.
The first 5 minutes of the first episode of the first season. If you don't laugh out loud, you can stop. But I can almost guarantee that you will.
Absolutely, yeah.
Hulu, and yes. Seasons 1-3, yes.
Okay, so for those who aren't familiar, let's tell people about the show. I mean, you play Jim Brockmire, who is probably out of work now thanks to baseball being put on hold, right?
Yes, Jim Brockmire is a man who has this kind of, I call it this 1970s baseball announcer voice, the generic baseball announcer voice of the 1970s. And it's a nervous breakdown on the air calling Kansas City game. About 13 years ago. Loses his mind in a blackout drunk, describes in detail what he walked in seeing on his wife, watching her have sex with a bunch of people in his living room. Describes it all on air while giving account, you know, never missing a beat in the baseball game. So I saw my wife, she was wearing what they, I don't know how dirty I can be on your show.
Go for it, just go for it.
Let's just say he describes distinct sex acts and what part of the body they're happening, and then says, as Pedro delivers a slider into the dirt, one of those. And get thrown out of baseball, and then we start the series with him trying to return to baseball some years later after doing things like calling cockfights in the Philippines and Lithuanian wife-carrying competitions, which is a natural thing that we didn't make up. And then hooks up with a man to see who's the owner of a minor league baseball team in a fracking town in Pennsylvania, and the series starts there with the guy trying to get back into baseball. Track that over 4 years.
I gotta tell you, if I had a nickel for every time you just described every one of those things, I'd be rich, right? You know, it all happens to all of us, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty much the tropes. It's that old, chestnut.
All right.
Of baseball announcer loses mind, meets girl, loses girl. But mostly it's an excuse to be really funny and have a very raunchy sex comedy. It then becomes about a lot of things as the series goes on.
See, now you've got everybody hooked on that first 5 minutes. Now they're just wanting to check it out. But you were also...
Yeah, I mean, it's really, the bottom line is it's very funny. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, no, and then you were executive producer. What made you jump into the driver's seat, though, for the show?
Well, this is an idea that I've had for years upon years. The voice I've been doing since I was like 15. It's a character I've been trying to develop for probably 20 or 30 years. Finally hit on the idea. Did it as a short, a funnier guy about... Then that got popular, so we turned it into a movie, which we almost shot. Lost our financing 4 days before shooting, but Funny or Die stayed with us. We turned it into a TV show, which is a blessing in disguise, because it lived much better as a cable series than anything else.
And that's the great thing about streaming services, as we've said, you know, it's on Hulu, so it can live on. And I think it can catch new audiences then if people missed it on the first run.
Which almost everybody did, sadly. We got kind of caught in, you know, it was that weird moment in television where cable stations were sort of to lose their steam, you know, and people were much more streaming. IFC went from Netflix to Hulu, and then they were still trying to get people to really take in the show to IFC so they wouldn't release it on Hulu till late, but all that is sorted out now. It's all on Hulu right now, so check it out.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about The Birdcage for just a minute, because as I said, that was one of my favorite movies, and you know, you worked with the fabulous Robin Williams, and you know, we've heard all about the stories of how he would ad lib and just get really funny, and they'd let him roll with it. What are your memories of shooting with Robin?
Ironically, Robin was not allowed to do much of that at all in The Birdcage.
Wow.
Because the great Mike Nichols, who directed it, mm-hmm. Elaine May, who wrote it. They really wanted to keep it a tight farce and not be sort of all over the place. We rehearsed it like a play for about 3 weeks, which is very rare for a movie. And what Mike said was, we're going to take down all the ad-libs and all the improvising that is funny. And we're going to incorporate that in the script. And then on the day we shoot, we're not going to do any of that. Because I want it to be, you know, moving forward at a fast pace, which drove poor Robin almost insane. He was just dying to, you know, go off in certain takes. And he would, like, beg Mike. He called him boss, please, wild take, one wild take. We called him wild takes when Robin, you know, would get to play around more.
Yeah.
So, and he would, you know, usually get one a scene. But mostly we just kind of stuck to the script, really.
Do you have one favorite memory from shooting?
There were so many to choose from. It really was just hanging out at the monitor. I would finish work, and then still be shooting. And I would, instead of leaving, I would just park myself in between Mike Nichols and Elaine May, and just get stories from them. And you know, about, you know, back in the day, and what it was like performing, and what their careers have been like. And then Mike was so joyous shooting that thing; he would laugh so much during takes that we'd have to like move him away, farther and farther away from the set, so he wouldn't ruin, you know, takes from laughing. And at one point, we also threw a blanket over him. Everybody was laughing. Hear him. I think that's my fondest memory.
Wow. That's, I mean, you know, a true legend. And I think that a lot of actors, we hear that it's almost a dream to work with somebody like that, because you just never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, he was a lot of things to a lot of people. He was just, he loved actors, he loved everybody creative. And he made everybody feel like they were his favorite. You know, we went to his memorial in New York, which had a huge turnout a few years ago. You know, there's all these amazing writers and actors and directors and producers there, and we all compared notes, and every one of us felt like we were Mike's favorite, you know? And Mike, and not in a shallow way, it's just Mike really loved everyone so much. He loved talent, and he loved people. And he was, you know, one of the few people in show business who was very giving, like really liked to pay attention and listen and get what you were all about. You know, he was, you know, I miss him.
A true legend, yeah. And now, in our final remaining moments, let's shift to The Simpsons, because remind everybody that you play almost every character, right? Sometimes I hear a little Agador in there, too.
Yeah, Julio on The Simpsons is really... It's Agador's voice, essentially, applied to a Simpsons character. And, I do like, you know, 20, 30 running characters. There's, you know, Dan Castellaneta and Harry Shearer do many, many as well. And Tress McNeil and Nancy Cartwright, who plays Bart, she does a bunch of the kids. She does a lot of different voices as well. Anyway, six of us doing all those voices all those years, with some exceptions. So we all do a lot.
Yeah, well, and you know, Al Jean is on our show every once in a while talking about the upcoming season. And so how is it looking ahead? Because I know, you know, TV production is shut down, but you guys often do episodes well in advance, right?
Well, yeah, and we're okay because we're animated, so it's not like anybody has to go on a set. And social distancing is easy to do in animation.
Mm-hmm.
They sent a lot of equipment to my house. So now I record right out of my house. I don't even go down to a sound studio anymore. So I think we can keep that up indefinitely. So, yeah, we're not really... I mean, I'm sure logistically it's been a pain for them, you know, having to be in... Everybody can't go down to the same studio, but but it works in this modern world. It works remotely just fine.
Well, let's peer behind the curtain and give people some insight. So do you guys all actually get in the room and voice it, like, in real time, or is it done separately? How does it usually work?
For the most part, it's done together, although I moved to New York 6 years ago, and very often we're recording separately from each other. I almost always am. Harry almost always is. He splits his time between New Orleans and England. So we're remote. Most animation is done separately. People are usually not together. But The Simpsons has always done it together. But I usually do it separately. And then they animate, and then you re-record a lot based on, what they liked or didn't like. And the process, it used to take over a year to get any single show on the air. Now they could do it in as quickly as 2 or 3 months. But it usually is about a year between the time we record and when the show airs.
Right. And quickly, though, I know you've been keeping busy during lockdown because you took part in a big fundraiser not too long ago. Tell everybody about Poker Stars.
Yeah, Poker Stars. We had about 60 American celebrities and another 30 European, soccer players and musicians and some actors all played in this giant poker tournament. And Poker Stars put up $1 million. And half a million of it all went straight to COVID relief. And the other half was divided among the charities that celebrities were playing for. So it was a really fun model. The winner, David Costival, who's on Billions and was Gale on Breaking Bad. Well, I went to Tough Swift, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
He won. He won $100,000 for his local New York charity. And it's a really good model. It's a way to have people play and be really motivated to win and have fun. And then but the lion's share of the money goes to the cause you're trying to help, which in this case, how to be frontline COVID relief. And we'll probably do it again because, a lot more money is needed.
Absolutely. And, that's the thing with the entertainment world essentially, shut down a couple of months ago. It's great to see all the stars, coming together and lending their voice and raising big bucks because, it's definitely needed.
Not to mention Poker Stars. They've been, in this world, they've been, a lot of people have been playing online poker. You can't really do it in America too much, only in a couple of states, but, worldwide you can. They really wanted to give back and not ask anybody to give but themselves. So they basically just took $1 million to the side for this and gave people a way to have fun for an afternoon as well.
Yeah. Hank, are you asking to become a Canadian? Because I might be able to pull some strings.
It's very tempted these days as an American it looks more, you look north with more and more envy and longing, let's put it that way. So I've worked so much in Canada, I probably could have dual citizenship at this point. My tax returns in some years were more Canadian than anything else.
All right, well, I'm going to let you go. My teenage crush, Hank Azaria, thanks so much for joining us today. Great to chat with you.
My pleasure.
We'll be watching Brockmire streaming on Hulu.